Hello. Hey, guys, remember me? This is Amy Shelfstrain with the Fishnets and Phantoms podcast. I've been away for a long time doing that graduate school thing. Let's see. I have got a couple years in under me and going to be the best art therapist as possible. I figured I'd throw out a episode in honor for Women's History Month. Woo! Women's History! Yay! Yeah, I know, it's a silly month and whatever. I mean, I guess it's nice to be recognized, but, eh. Anyways, Fishnets and Phantoms is your podcast on movie reviews, pop culture reviews, and I don't know, whatever I feel like putting in. Great thanks to the... I can't remember the name suddenly of the podcast or the podcast group we're under. Oh yeah, Doc Discussions Group, that's it. Doc Discussions Group and Phil Perrone, the wonderful head of that, who gives us so very much help and encouragement. Okay, so this is going to be a short episode. I think that I will mostly do a quick review on the incredible movie that just came out, which is Dune, Part 2. Let's see, a couple science news thingy-majiggies. Apparently, the orcas are still attacking ships. A little slowed down, but yeah, they're still going for it. Okay, I know I probably shouldn't, like, you know, cheer on the orcas, but, I gotta cheer on somebody, I guess. So, yay, orcas! Alright, other than that, oh yeah, they found some sort of strange life form in people's tonsils, or like, some, like, in your alimentary tract somehow, and they're calling them, Oh, no, I can't remember the name of it. It's like a pylon or something like that. That's not the right word. It's whatever the Washington Monument is. But anyways, because they look like that, which is weird because they don't really look like that. At least I don't think so on the picture that I saw in the paper. But, yeah, they're strange kind of crystal-shaped things in our gut system, our gut and throat system, and they don't really know what it is, and they don't know if it's harmful, and they don't know if it's good, and they don't really know where it came from, and yeah, yay, don't be scared, not at all, ha, why would you be scared? Anyways, they seem to be spreading willy-nilly, and nobody can stop it, because nobody knows what it is, much less has even noticed it was there yet, yeah. So, okay, if that doesn't start up another genre of horror films, I don't know what will, actually. I'm surprised it isn't a horror film already. Let's see, we're going in March. We're going on St. Patrick's Day, which is a lot of fun and is awesome and is not really based much on anything verifiable. I guess St. Patrick was a saint, but he was from the Middle East, and he only lived in Ireland for a little while, and as far as I know, people in Ireland don't really celebrate St. Patrick's Day, and they think that America's weird. Well, everybody thinks America's weird. That's kind of a normal thing. I don't even know what Witch's Holiday is coming up right now. I know that we just passed Symbolic. At least I think we just passed Symbolic. I get confused. But, yeah. Dune. Okay, so Dune 1 came out, like, give or take 3 years ago, 2.5, something like that. And it was great. It was really good. It was much better than the 80s one, though I still love the 80s one because, yeah, it's, you know, from my time. Dune 2, it kind of just starts where the last one left off. They're walking the body home that Mowdib just killed. Well, he's not Mowdib yet. And they basically become part of the Fremen tribe. It's has a bit of stuff about him, like basically gaining entry into the Fremen tribe and choosing his name, which he chooses Mowdib. Him and Chani get hooked up. They become a couple for a while, but they don't really make a huge thing about it. They keep it pretty subtle, just, you know, show them together a lot. Mom is pregnant with a creepy child. Well, she gets creepier. She starts out normal baby. Then mom thinks it's, the Fremen people want her to become the new Reverend Mother for them. And so she will have to drink this thing called the Elixir of Life or the Water of Life or something like that. I can't remember what it is. It's this blue liquid, and it comes from the sandworms. And I can't remember if it was the bile of the sandworms or the pee of the sandworms. Anyways, it's gross, whatever it is. So she does. She drinks the sandworm stuff, and she dies, almost dies. She gets real close to dying. But she has learned the secret from the Bene Gesserit of expelling poisons from her system. And so she manages to live through it, which right there is a huge plus. Well, I mean, I guess it's a huge plus, definitely, because she's still alive. But the Fremen see it as like a sign, like kind of like a miracle sort of thing that she's able to do that. And then somebody points out she's pregnant. And everybody freaks out a little bit because, wow, I'm definitely not supposed to do that with a pregnant lady. But the I don't know, Water of Life or whatever, imbues into the bebe. And bebe gets freaky. Baby's eyes open and they're super blue. Plus they opened. I mean, they're not supposed to open for quite some time yet. Yeah. Anyways, Paul kind of knows what's going on. He's getting groomed and getting basically set up to be the person in mythology, like the new prophet in mythology, to head the world of Arrakis and do X, Z, and Y, whatever, X, Y, Z. And Chani and him talk about it, and he's like, well, I don't really want to do that. That sounds horrible. I know that if I go to the south, apparently they're in the north now, you know, because, you know, I don't know, like, on this planet that is fictional and we don't really know what's going on, but, you know, hey, whatever. So he's like, no, I don't want to do that. And if I do that, I've seen, like, dreams of thousands of people dying, like not just like, you know, 5 or 10 or 20 or 100 or 300 or whatever, like thousands. And he's like, no, I definitely do not want to do that. But I guess he basically finds out that it will be better if he does for the universe. And yeah, he's like, okay, well, all right, sure. I'll be a crazy prophet, sort of figure. So he ends up drinking the Water of Life also, and again, almost dies, is basically laying on the ground twitching, and Chani finds him and is like, you fucker, basically. Because she knows that that's the only reason that he would have done that is because he's going to go along with the plan. And some things happen. I mean, okay, I think I said in past podcasts that I am bad about spoilers. I'm just going to spoiler away. So, yeah, if you don't like spoilers, then find a cooler podcast that does not do spoilers. Which I will tell everyone is Dark Discussions. Dark Discussions has a wonderful platform where they are very good about spoilers. Do not reveal them at all until after they go through the movie and have managed to warn everybody ahead of time not to listen after such and such point. I do not do that. I have completely and totally given up on that.
The
and
comes home Friday, July 19th.
Yeah, I am not good at that whatsoever. So anyways, do not listen to this anymore if you don't want spoilers, which I think I already did some spoilers. So, okay, here we go. So she does this thing where I think she has to spit in his mouth, or she has to get some of the water of life stuff and mix it with her saliva and spit it, and then he wakes up and is alive, which, you know, hey, that's a plus right there, because she just drank a ton of poison. And he gains all sorts of new powers, and he can now see into the past and future, which I thought it was odd that they mentioned that he could see into the past, because, yeah, everybody can see into the past. It's called remembering. But I guess it's, like, more of a knowledge of everything in the world, not just his own personal past. Meanwhile, there is some B-roll on the Emperor and his daughter and his son, Fayed. And apparently it's Fayed's birthday, and because they're really sweet, kind people, they think it is... I got that wrong. It's the Baron Harkonnen and his son, Fayed. Ignore the Emperor. He's off doing his own thing. Different planet. Okay, so Baron Harkonnen is on his planet, which is a freaky-ass planet. Villanueva said that he's shot the entire planet of scenes in ultra... No, is it ultraviolet? No, it's not ultraviolet. It's the red... Okay. Well, anyways, infrared, that's it. He shot it in infrared, and so it comes out as a really crisp, really beautiful black and white. And that is definitely their planet. It is all black and white due to the way the sun hits. The sun is black. Yeah, that's fun. They are very cruel and freaky people. They show the very beginning, it's Fayed's birthday, and he is getting ready for his birthday treat, I guess. And to do so, he decides that he's going to slit somebody's throat. Yay, one of his, like, girls, whatever, I don't know. Anyways, they let him do that, and meanwhile, his brother is fighting in, like, this big kind of, like, fighting pit stadium sort of thing, and there's, like, these stands full of millions of people. I mean, like, it really looks like, okay, thousands of people at least. Probably couldn't fit millions of people in a stadium and actually be able to see things, but there's a lot of people there. So the Harkonnens are having their celebratory days, and Fayed gets to fight a couple of Atreides people that they had saved from being killed in the general raid that they had made on the Atreides settlement, I guess you'd call it. I don't know, the Atreides dukedom in the first movie. And Fayed realizes that they have not been drugged. Usually they, isn't that sweet, they drug people and then fight them and kill them horribly. They're not good people. That's what I would like to say. The Harkonnens are not good people. But, okay. So he kills a bunch of Atreides warriors. And in, you know, generally horrible, visceral ways. Then this lady, whose name I forgot, seduces Fayed, and apparently eventually they have kids. I'm not sure which part is first, if they do the part with the Emperor first, or if they do the part with Fayed first, but if they did the Emperor part first, sorry, the Emperor and his daughter start talking about their machinations and their plots and how they're going to rule the universe. And it turns out that the Emperor actually was the one that gave the order for killing the Atreides, and it wasn't the Harkonnens who thought this was a great idea in the first place. Well, I'm absolutely sure that the Harkonnens were like, yay, hey, we're on board for this, let's kill a lot of people, because that is how they do. That is how the Harkonnens do. The Emperor is hanging out talking with his daughter, who is Florence Pugh, and they, you know, are kind of like going through the plans, and by the look on her face, she's not a big fan of the killing off the Atreides idea, I think, but it's kind of hard to tell because they're just kind of all horrible people, like really... Pretty much this is the universe of horrible people, because even the people that you like, that you cheer for, not so great, you know? Not that, really not the greatest people. I like to think that they were the greatest people, but yeah, no, not really. So they are like, okay, well, we need to quell this desert uprising, because you can't have... anybody in charge of the planet with all the spice on it without it being somebody that's under the thumb of the government, which is the Emperor. So the Emperor decides, hey, I'm going to go to Arrakis, hang out, you know, meet some people, see some worms, you know, the whole good thing. And so they go there just in time for Paul and his Fremen to get there on their giant ass sandworms. And so they come into the city and basically smash through all the enforcements against them and get ready to, they get ready to basically take over the city. They do take over the city. And Paul goes to where the Emperor is right away. And the Emperor's like, whoa, you know, I'm not going to fight you. I'm an old man. I'm a little old man. Ooh, look at me. I'm just a little old man. You can't hurt me. And he's like, well, I choose for my champion, I guess, Fayad. I'm going to choose Fayad to be my champion. And he apparently had forgotten the whole part about, yeah, they usually drug their opponents, so he isn't really... Fayad's a good fighter. I mean, from what they show, he's a really good fighter, but... Yeah, I mean, you know, drug fighters do not fight well, so he kind of is used to that. He's used to fighting drugged people, and he's not used to fighting an actual person who is trying to save their own lives and the lives of all the people they love and care about, who are going to fight a little extra harder and go that extra mile to fight back. So anyways, they kind of face off. They do the old, you know... They're going to say some sort of ancient line to you. I'm going to say some ancient line to you. And something about, like, shattering their sword. Whatever. Meanwhile, he insults Chani. He's like, oh, should I treat your pet specially after you're dead? And, of course, they don't like that. Neither Paul nor Chani. And they get kind of bristly. And, yeah, so then it's fight time, and they fight very well. They have an excellent fight choreographer, have an incredible, dagger battle. They're not exactly swords, but they're not daggers really either. I don't know, they're short swords, short sword battle? Yeah. So they have a really cool battle that ends way too fast. I thought it would go on for a bit, but yeah. Fayad, who's, I don't know, like, licking his lips and just can't wait to get the kill, decides to faint at Paul, and Paul counters and gets, I think he gets stabbed. He gets stabbed a bit. And then they make some sort of crazy move where it looks like Fayad totally skewers Paul in the stomach, but actually... It's Paul who skewered Fayad. Ah! Yeah, not that everybody's seen that a million times, but, you know, still cool. Yeah, so Johnny runs to him and, you know, he's going to give him a hug and stuff. And he's like, got this weird look on his face. And she's like, well, what's going on? And he's like, I just want you to know that I'll love you to the end of time or some shit like that. And she knows then that there's something up. And he goes to the emperor, and the emperor's like, oh, okay, well, how about this? How about you marry my daughter, and then you can be emperor, and you don't kill me, because I don't want to be killed. And so the, I don't know, Paul, like, considers it in his mind and decides, oh, okay, I won't kill you, emperor, and then I'll marry your daughter, Florence Pugh. I like Florence Pugh. I just like to say her name funny because it's funny. So, yeah, Chani is pissed, as one would be, you know, one's been, like, pseudo, like, married to this guy for, I don't know how many years, in the desert, you know, teaching him how to live and become, one of her people, and, you know, all these really cool things, and then he goes off with this other chick, and she knows it's a political marriage, and that it's really nothing to do with love or anything like that, and he's not abandoning her, you know, he probably would just keep her as his side piece or whatever they call it. But she's pissed anyways, and, you know, I don't blame her. So she runs out, and for all intents and purposes, she runs and gets a sandworm and, like, rides off on it. I think there might have been something in between, but not much. So then they kind of do, like, a hop, skip, and a jump to the final battles where the Freemen attack the spice mining operations and basically use their nukes to blow a hole in their, you know, shield walls and stop all the spice production and basically take over Arrakis that way. And that's kind of like the leverage that Paul had over the Emperor in the first place. I mean, you know, killing Fade was a big thing, but also, also we're going to take over the spice. So yeah, and that's pretty much it. That is technically the end of the book. There's a lot of stuff that isn't. Well, okay, they do kind of, they mention it a little bit. They, so his crazy sister, the crazy sister with the blue eyes, even though she's an embryo, she's got full of, for some reason, fully formed eyes, and she opens them in the womb. And, yeah, so she's been talking to him and his mom, like, I guess, telekinetically? I don't think that's right, but she's got telepathy somehow. She can talk to them. And they show her, like, kind of like a future vision of her, which is Anya Taylor-Joy, which, of course, Anya Taylor-Joy is insanely beautiful. And so, you know, everybody's like, ah, yeah, Anya Taylor-Joy, cool. So she's kind of like, oh, I will love you forever and blah, blah, blah. So you think she's going to be this really great person. Yay. Yeah. Well, if you had read the book, she kind of like, no, she's kind of crazy. And she is kind of crazy. But I guess that's too far of a spoiler point for me to throw in. It looks like they're going to be able to make a third Dune movie, which is great. Daniel Villeneuve, I'm sorry, I'm very tired. He is going to make it, and then he's going to bow out gracefully, and then somebody else can take a turn at it, I guess, unless he just is like, dude, now I have to finish this. Because there's, like, this is the main Dune book, which is a big fat book, and then there's Dune Messiah, and Children of Dune and God Emperor of Dune. I think that's the four of them. I don't know if they are all going to be made or if they're just going to go for the first three. From now, I read these when I was like 17, and I kind of bowed out after the third one because there's something that happens in the third one that's silly. I couldn't forgive it. I wanted to, but I just, yeah, no. I won't get into that, but yeah, they're going to, if they do end up going farther, there's probably a way that Daniel Villeneuve can make it cool, because he can. He's a really good director. He's very good at getting a story across in a, we're going to say, palpable way. yeah, so we'll see what happens with Dune 3. It's going to probably take him a couple of years again to film that. And, yeah, so in terms of filmmaking, this movie is incredibly well done. It's like Villeneuve, oh God, I can't say his name. Villeneuve. I'm sorry, Daniel, wherever you are, not that you care and or ever going to listen to this podcast. If you do, say hey, you know, send me a note. It's beautifully filmed. It's, just the cinematography is incredible, and I know that he as a director has a lot to do with the cinematography, not just, you know, put it in the cinematographer's hands and step back sort of guy. He very, very much is involved in every piece of his movies, which you can see in everything that he's done. He did Arrival with the like kind of like squid alien sort of things, which is really cool, and it's a really interesting way of getting to the how are we going to talk to whatever aliens we meet, because they don't have the same sort of language or the same sort of outlook on time that we do, or the same sort of outlook on anything that we do. But, you know, maybe we can give it a decent try. He did that one, and he did Blade Runner 2046, and those are both filmed beautifully, and I can't remember what else he's done, but like I said, everything is done perfectly. It's so cool how he makes the sandworms work. The sandworms are pretty terrifying. I mean, they could be really silly. They could very easily be really silly. They could look like Tremors worms, but they do a good job of making them terrifying and cool, and yet when they are, tamed is the right word, but they use them as steeds later on. That's a cool scene, too, where Paul learns how to ride a worm, and he brings back a grandfather worm that he managed to call with the help of Chani, and yeah, so, like I said, everything's beautiful. They do good use of the blue eye effect. They don't just like give it out like kind of more like a willy nilly sort of thing. I don't remember exactly in David Lynch's version if everybody had the blue eyes, but I don't think that everybody does in this. Yeah, so it's very well done. The cuts that he's made and like the reconfiguring of the story work really well. In the end, Chani does not go back with Paul. She's off on her own, and she does her own like worm riding and leading of the attacks with the sandworms, and she's, you know, a island unto herself, a person unto herself, which is great. She's not going to take it, and I think that that's a lot more of a kind of a modern look on what women will take and what they won't take in a situation, and I thought that was good that Villeneuve went with that. Florence Pugh seems pretty cool in general. She's like, okay, yeah, we're married, whatever. You know, you're kind of hot. I'll sleep with you. You know, like, yeah, she's no big deal. They don't really show any of that. But eventually they're going to have, like, you know, their relationship and the Children of Dune, as the title of the book coming says. But yeah, the whole thing is wrapped up nicely, and yeah, well, that's it. That's Dune 2, and I highly suggest that you see it in a theater, because it is a big movie. It's very much filmed for a large audience. So definitely go and see it in a theater if you can, if there's any way. I mean, seeing it at home is nice because you get to relax and, you know, chill, get your kitty hats ready and, you know, puppy dogs if you have them, whatever. But in general, it's best to see it in a theater if you can. Okay, so that is the end of this podcast. I will see you guys whenever I can. I don't know when I'm going to be able to get something thrown out there, but I will try to get something to you as soon as I can. All right, take care, stay weird, don't bite the bed bugs, all that stuff. All right, bye.